This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. On Brainwaves this week, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar is joined by Dr. Mazia Matrosli to discuss something called exergaming. Dr. Mazia has been working on the exergaming study for her PhD on patients with spinal cord injury and is keen to share this exergaming approach for rehabilitation, not just for spinal cord injuries, but how it can be applied across the board for many other physical conditions. If you're wondering what exergaming is, and I hope I'm really pronouncing it correct, it's some virtual reality games. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fine.
Good.
Dr. Azlina, what made you want to bring Dr. Mazia in today and discuss exergaming of all things? I mean, it's a new word, entirely new word to me. I didn't know it existed.
Yeah, well, same with me, really. I mean, I actually first came across it when Mazia was actually giving a presentation during our faculty, we call it the 3-minute thesis. So in UM and actually in many universities across the world, they run a competition whereby they encourage the postgraduate students to present their entire thesis in just 3 minutes.
Wow.
So Mazia was one of the participants and she won second place. And then after that, then I sat in on Haviva and I learned a little bit more about it. And I thought, you know, this is really very good. And as you will hear, I'm sure Mazia is, you know, super passionate about exergaming. So I thought, you know, it'd be good for people. And I can see how it can be applied to, you know, quite a number of different, you know, conditions, not just for the spinal cord injury that she was looking at. So I thought, you know, why not we tell more people about it and, you know, in our quest to get people active and exercising more.
Yeah, right? I mean, it always used to upset me about this whole idea of virtual reality games because I always felt it was making people more and more sedentary until I, you know, did some research and reading about this and thought to myself, okay, there is some application for something like this. Mazia, what got you into exergaming? You have a medical degree, I understand.
Yes. There's always a negative connotation to exergaming. People always associate it with the usual video games. But now, since I was always into video games ever since I was young, and actually, exergaming is a part of a genre of serious games where you integrate active bodily movements into video gaming environment. So exergaming is just a combination of those two. So you can actually play sports-like motion games using exergaming technology, and it has first been introduced in 2010 by a gaming company from Japan. It's called Nintendo.
Oh, right. Of course, we know Nintendo.
Yeah, well, we've all played those, what do you call the boxing games,
yes.
Right, on Nintendo?
Yes. But unfortunately for me, in my research study for my PhD, I didn't use Nintendo. I actually used the PlayStation technology, which is, I would say, a bit better in terms of the specifications required to exert more intensity during active bodily movements for the video game.
But this paper was purely to look at spinal cord injuries and
yes.
How exergaming actually helped with that whole process. But before we go into that, Dr. Azlina, could you briefly describe to us the spinal cord injuries and how it affects neurological and physiological functions? Then we can see how something like virtual reality games can actually come in and help that process.
Right. I've done a little bit of work on spinal cord injury. One of my students was doing it, Dauda. But of course, Mazia, it would be more of an expert than me. But basically, spinal cord injury happens when there's been some sort of force or trauma to the spinal cord. And that affects and that damages the nervous system, the spinal cord, all the neurons that are within the spinal cord, either by compressing it, or by completely severing it. So you can have various degrees of severity. And then, of course, then that will lead on to, you know, the differing effects that it would have on you. And again, at which level of the spinal cord is also affected would then cause, you know, either loss of control of the lower limbs or complete loss of control of all the limbs, for example. And of course, you know, the person who we often think about would be, you know, Superman or Christopher Reeve, of course, you know, who sustained spinal cord injury after he fell from a horse, I believe. And he is a quadriplegic.
Yes.
Yeah. And he has actually been very actively pouring in quite a lot of, you know, donations and encouraging a lot of research into trying to find ways and how to heal the spinal cord injury after getting damaged. And there's actually been quite a lot of research that's been done. And, you know, there have been a number of papers actually that have sort of said that when you rehabilitate someone after spinal cord injury, you know, it's really important to get them exercising, because actually just the act of being active is releasing, you know, your muscles that are there. They're actually releasing these sort of very important cocktail of proteins into the body that then help in the repair process and in the subsequent recovery. Yeah. Would you like to add anything else, Mazia?
I've did some studies on spinal cord injury population both in Malaysia as well as internationally. And we've discovered that the lifestyle of the people with spinal cord injury has been in the lower spectrum of being active. So they are pretty sedentary. So what I tried to do was try to incorporate exergaming into making them more motivated to participate in exercise that is intensity adequate for health benefits, so that this improves their quality of life.
So do we know why they are sedentary? Why is it? I mean, you said motivation is important, but are we not doing enough to help these people?
Okay, some of the major barriers to active lifestyle for individuals with spinal cord injury has been divided into four thematic frameworks, which I classified under physical limitations. Most of them are wheelchair users, especially if even though only lower limb is affected. And it also comes under social environmental factors, such as access to facilities for exercise and sports participation, as well as personal characteristics, because they are depressed of the current condition that they are facing, as well as policies and economics. So our government has not been supporting them in terms of funds for them to get access to better wheelchairs, for mobilization for them, and there's not enough support to motivate them to lead normal lives like able-bodied.
Okay, so it just goes to our pavements, how we build our pavements, and everything else that goes along with it. Yeah, public transportation.
If you need a wheelchair to get around, you know, if your car can't fit it, and who's going to help you? You know, you always need that kind of extra support. And if nobody's there to help you, how are you going to, you know, actually go to those, you know, rehabilitation centres? So, this is where it's great that if you can do it at home.
Yeah, this is for rehab as such. Mm. But does exergaming work for everyone with a spinal cord injury?
See, the misconception is that rehab only caters for improvements in the neurological systems of people with spinal cord injury. But rehabilitation also covers areas such as exercise and sports participation for individuals with spinal cord injury. And this includes asking them to maintain an active lifestyle, which is necessary for them to maintain a good quality of health.
Okay. Dr. Azlina, what about, you know, we always talk to you about people with neurodegenerative problems, issues, Parkinson's, dementia, Alzheimer's. Do you see exergaming or virtual reality games helping this group of people as well?
I mean, I think definitely. I mean, if we were to start with Parkinson's disease, you know, across the board, it's always good to keep active and to exercise. And I think the great thing about exergaming is that it can be modified to suit the capability of the person. So for example, you know, if a person with Parkinson's, you know, with the tremors and with the slowness in movement, you know, if they could be guided through doing certain movements, then, you know, that actually may, right, contribute to, you know, remodeling part of the brain. So the part of the brain that is damaged in Parkinson's disease at the beginning is the basal ganglia, which is where these dopaminergic neurons reside. And so that's why the people who have Parkinson's, they take L-DOPA, which is thought to replace the dopamine that is lost when you lose these neurons, right? So you lose the neurotransmitter. But there are other areas in the brain that also control movement. So it's not just that part of the brain which is important. So although you have damage to a specific part, but there may also be a possibility that other parts of the brain can sort of compensate to a certain extent, right? And there have been a number of studies that have sort of shown that, you know, if with repeated activity, repeated training sessions, that you can actually see some sort of remodeling of the brains, such that it becomes a little bit easier for people with Parkinson's. And, you know, it's not just that, but it's also the social aspect of it. And maybe Mazia will go into it. You know, it's not just you doing it on your own, but it's also, you know, that you can also play with other people. And I think, you know, with any condition, you know, if it gives you some sort of motivation to do something that day, and if on top of that, it's something that is keeping you active, mm-hmm. and keeping those, you know, keeping your muscles going, keeping those limbs going, you know, and helping you interact with other people, then, you know, I think that's a, you know, it's a plus plus, right? And similarly with dementia, you know, perhaps at the beginning, they may be able to follow it to a certain extent. To, you know, later stages, they may need a little bit more help. But I think, you know, it's always a problem with the elderly population. You know, they tend to, after they retire, they think they, you know, it's time just to relax. I just want to hang out in the hammock and, you know, just sit in the swing. But actually, you know, you really do need to keep as active as possible. And so I think, you know, if this is an option, you know, it's something that you can do together with your grandchildren, mm-hmm. yep. right? Because what grandchildren wouldn't love you to have exactly. the grandparents to have Nintendo? They'll come visit every weekend.
Motivation. At the end of the day, we are discussing exergaming, which is virtual reality games for especially people with spinal cord injury. We're also discussing how this can possibly help with people with neurodegenerative issues like dementia and Parkinson's. We'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. In the studio with me in our Brainwave series, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist, and Dr. Mazia Matrosli, a trainee lecturer and medical officer at the Department of Physiology, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. We're discussing something called exergaming. Mazia, you want to tell me you've done some research for your PhD as far as exergaming is concerned. What were your findings? How did you go about carrying out this study?
All right. Interestingly, I did exergaming studies and tried to adapt the system for use for people with spinal cord injury who are actually wheelchair users, and also include people who have upper limb involvement. That means they are unable to use their hands, both their hands, fully functionally. And what I found that you need a few adaptations that's required for them to play the game and fully, how do I say, enjoy the game in a manner that able-bodied can also enjoy the game. So the first thing was that I had to adapt the controllers to fit individuals who are had upper limb involvement so that they can grip the controllers yes. easily. And then the small buttons are removed for the gameplay. And also the system's camera has to be accommodated for lower length, mm-hmm. lower level, something mm-hmm. like that, lower level, so that it accommodates to the wheelchair users. And another thing is I tried to compare the enjoyment as well as the perceived exertion. How much are they actually doing while exercising compared to conventional equipment exercises? And what I found is that they've perceived exergaming as the more enjoyable one. It was significantly more enjoyable statistically, quantitatively as well as qualitatively, and also the intensity produced while exergaming is very much similar to conventional exercise equipment. So if it's the same but they enjoyed one exergaming more, why not we promote exergaming more? Because it's, by the end of the day, it's portable. You can use it indoors so that bad weather outside, especially in Malaysia where it's hot or it's raining too much. They can still use the game for sports participation, even in buildings. And it's also interactive. They can play it via online with competitors from around the world with online specifications.
There you go.
What kind of games did you have them play?
Well, I had them play four types of game, which is the boxing, the tennis, the kayaking, as well as the gladiator duel.
Okay, and how did they do?
They preferred the boxing the most. That was number one.
Were they all boys?
I would enjoy that.
Well, most of my participants were males. This is because the epidemiology of spinal cord injury is mostly traumatic, mostly motor vehicle accidents, right. So it's more inclined towards males. So 80% of my participants were males, but they also enjoyed tennis, the second, and they did not like gladiator duel.
Okay.
Why was that they didn't like it?
Too young, perhaps?
Too hard?
It was a bit hard for them, yeah, because there were maneuvers that they couldn't fully perform while in a wheelchair, such as spinning.
Right.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
Okay.
And jumping.
What about the social aspect, as Dr. Azlina mentioned? How did they fare on a social level?
They have reported to me that they would like to bring it home, play it with their family members, like children or spouse or perhaps their friends or cousins.
Yep.
And they've also wanted to play it with their friends via online. And I'm actually hosting a sports exergaming competition nationally in Malaysia for individuals who are wheelchair users.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But how do we make this accessible to everyone?
We're working with people from the SOCSO to make it more affordable. And I'm also trying to write to the Sony Computer Entertainment to actually give discounts for individuals with physical disabilities so that it might be more affordable for them to bring back home. But it's still in initial stages, so I haven't fully started all these processes to make it more affordable for these people.
What's driving this enthusiasm, Mazia? It's very obvious. It's just coming through that, you know, you're going to do more and more and more in
it's
this
world
area.
Domination,
yes. For people who are wheelchair born and who have experienced spinal cord injuries, what is it that drives you?
So what drives me is definitely my enthusiasm towards video games.
And so you love it. First and foremost, you love it.
Yes.
And then you decided to find some sort of good value for it.
Yes.
Since all of us say it's bad.
Everybody says it. Even my funders.
But so first and foremost, you're a video gamer yourself. And
yeah.
Then, what made you think that on a neurological level, this would make a difference to people who have experienced spinal cord injury?
Because for the population with spinal cord injury, most of them are, I would say the median age of this population at the onset of the injury will be around 18 to 30 years old.
That's very young.
They have a long way to go. And if they are not motivated to maintain a quality of life that is sustainable for them in the long run, it's not going to be very good for them. So I need to take something or make something motivating and engaging for this population so that they maintain a very active lifestyle. Their life expectancy will be longer. And the quality of life would be higher.
Okay.
So I believe in something, and it should be I promote something that I believe in to people who are targeted.
Yeah. So do you know sort of how soon after the injury the people should start using exergaming?
So initially within the first year, the first thing the spinal cord injury population should focus on is neuroplasticity, which is a way of trying to build up neuron connections so that they are able to maintain their functions, neuron functions. So within the first year, I wouldn't recommend somebody to take part in exercise or sports that is such as exergaming yet. But within the second year and onwards, that's the time where they can lead normal lives. Normal lives meaning that they can maintain the physical activity level that is even before their injury.
So healing is done.
Yeah.
Then you work on the neuroplasticity.
Is that sort of the normal time scale of how rehabilitation, the normal, let's say, you know, physical exercise outside, you take a year to heal, and then you start doing it in the second year.
Yes,
I see.
Because within the first year, that's the time where the neurons connect very, very quickly. But after the second year, usually there will be no improvements. So usually we don't touch patients who are within the first 2 years.
I see.
Yeah.
What is it about exercise that triggers this process of neuroplasticity?
They will release, when exercising at an intensity that is adequate, you'll release a lot of mediators which promote neuronal connections. So that's when exercising at an intensity that is adequate, those mediators actually assist neuronal reconnections.
Okay, so that will work for even people who have not experienced spinal cord injuries.
And not even just for spinal cord injury as well. I think I came across this paper. It was saying that running may even help to repair some types of brain damage. So it's not just the damage to the spinal cord, but also, you know, the cortical, in the cortex. And they specifically, and this was a group in Canada, and they published, this must have been about 2 years ago, in a journal, Cell Report. So a group led by this researcher named David Pickett. And basically what they found was that if you get some mice to run, the physical exercise actually increases the release of a certain chemical or growth factor, okay, a nerve growth factor known as VGF. And this VGF sort of kickstarts a whole range of, you know, pathways in the brain, one of which is it's an antidepressant even. And also it can help to heal any damage that might have happened to the sort of what we call the myelin sheath, which is a kind of insulation around the axon. So you have the neuron, and the neuron has a process which we call the axon, and around the axon we have like a fatty layer known as the myelin sheath. And this myelin sheath is really important because it helps in the transmission of the information within the neuron. So if you lose that, then you affect how information is being passed on from one neuron to another and from the neuron to the muscle, for example. So they found that if you have damage even within the cortex, that this particular nerve growth factor is helping to sort of kickstart a number of different repair processes, one of which is repairing the myelin sheath around the axon. So, exercise, as you mentioned, you know, not just for spinal cord injury, but also for Parkinson's disease and also Alzheimer's. And, and if you have things that are being released by the brain and within the body that, like nerve growth factors, you know, that may also have a role in, neurogenesis. So, producing new nerve cells within the brain, which then will help to then compensate for any loss that might have occurred.
I always was under the impression that brain cells don't regenerate.
You can have neurogenesis. So, I mean, that many people used to think that you were born with a set number of brain cells and that was it. But actually now more and more research has shown that you do have neurogenesis happening in particular parts of the brain. In the hippocampus even, which is very important for memory, also within surrounding what we call the ventricle. So if you look in the brain, we've got these sort of hollow spaces which are filled with the cerebral spinal fluid. Mm-hmm. And around there you have a lot of neurogenesis, so new neurons that are being born. And this is sort of now fact, and that we believe that, we are getting more... new neurons that are made. Not only that, but it also can, another paper as well that was sort of talking about in terms of spinal cord injury, but you can also, exercise itself can actually boost the production of certain other proteins which are involved in the maintaining connections between neurons. So the neurons that are still there, you can actually strengthen them, you can enhance them. So this is where the kind of, neuroplasticity, as Dr. Mazia was saying, and also kind of helping to remodel certain parts of the brain.
Okay, yeah. So it goes back, Dr. Alina, we've spoken about neurodegenerative problems and how your health in middle age is so important to try and keep these neurodegenerative issues at bay, or at least to reduce your chances of developing them later on in life. And you find a lot of people now going into extreme sort of exercise. So I suppose this is the understanding of what's going on when you exercise on the brain level.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, the exercise, people do exercise because they want to keep fit. You know, people always used to think that, you know, they want to make their heart stronger. You know, they want to have stronger muscles. Of course, that is a given. But it's also having a direct impact on brain health. Right. And, you know, it's repairing damage. You know, our brain cells every day are sort of, you know, being bombarded with all sorts of factors that might be causing sort of, you know, subtle damage, you know, but over time, you know, it can accumulate. So, you know, if you can sort of have these sort of repair mechanisms, you know, coming in, you know, every time you exercise and, you know, you have a little bit of repair, sorry, you have a little bit of damage, then you can repair it a little bit. And, you know, so that can kind of try to prevent or delay in a way if you were to go on to develop any of these neurodegenerative disease. So, yeah, so, you know, I think it's really important to you know, exercise, you know, and especially when you get into the middle ages.
But that's in the brain. What about the spinal cord? What's going on in the spinal cord when you actually exercise?
So the main concern physiologists like me would be concerned in spinal cord injury is that the muscle will be, that there'll be spasticity and it will not function as fully as what is required. So when you exercise, when you train the muscles, you actually train the muscles to be more resistant and increase the strength for even simple tasks like transferring themselves from the wheelchair to the car or the bed to the wheelchair. So when you exercise, you actually improve the muscular strength to provide this kind of force for them to move.
So we're not going to claim that it will help you. It will not move mountains, but it will help you strengthen and be able to stop
any further damage.
Yes, yeah. Stop further damage as well as to lead a better life, perhaps.
And the intensity that I would recommend, as recommended by all exercise physiologists around the world for spinal cord injury, is to maintain aerobic exercise. That means they have to put it out there with exercise for at least 150 minutes a week, to be spread out within 2 or 3 days, 150 minutes of those. That's just aerobic exercise. There's also another muscular resistance exercise where you lift weights to improve your strength, and you need to do that in at least 4 to 6 of your major muscles, 6 repetitions a day for the next 2 to 3 days a week.
You meant the gym.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, but that sounds like for, you know, people who are not even, who have not experienced spinal cord injury, but this is for spinal cord injuries, people who are wheelchair bound and stuff like that.
Actually, there has been 2 school of thoughts, one for spinal cord injury and another one for able-bodied.
Yep.
And a lot of people actually saying that why should we put intensity as equal to able-bodied? But they say that you, even though you are a person with spinal cord injury, has disabilities that might prevent them from performing full exercise recommendations per able-bodied, it's still required because that's the energy, the dose that is dose potency or dose response that is required to maintain the muscular strength. But there's also another school of thought which says that you need moderate to vigorous intensity, but only at 60 to 90 minutes a week, so it's lesser. But they have shown that the amount of duration, 60 to 90 minutes, is not adequate enough. That means they don't release enough hormones or mediators to improve the muscles.
I see. Okay. So it's still, you are still a person, I suppose, with the build and your age and all of that. And then everything still applies, whether you are able-bodied or not. This is just, it's the same principle, I suppose, is what you're saying. So does anyone sort of is interested to get started, how would they do that as far as exergaming is concerned?
So right now, People can with spinal cord injury can actually get into contact with the rehabilitation experts from UMMC, University of Malaya Medical Center. They have a team and they have a building specifically 12 floors in UMMC in the north, the south wing, where they specialize in improving active lifestyle for individuals with physical disabilities, not just for spinal cord injury, but also for stroke, cerebral palsy, as well as Alzheimer's disease.
Okay. And you're seeing a lot of technology now for rehab medicine, Dr. Azlina. I mean, do you think that this is a good thing, necessarily a good thing, or do you think one day it'll come and bite us in the back?
I think it's a good thing, yeah. I mean, I think it's great because it's sort of building on something that people naturally enjoy. I mean, people have been playing Nintendo. Nintendo has been around for how long? It hasn't gone away, right? So that shows it is still popular. Now we're on to PlayStation what? Four?
PlayStation
Five?
4.
Yeah, right. So that's, you know, it's going to be around for a long time. And I think, you know, it's great if we can kind of piggyback on it. I just sort of wanted to ask in terms of people with spinal cord injury, are there any, do you know if there's any kind of, what are the best, in a way, exercises that a person can do? Is it that you kind of focus on kind of weight training, or is it strength, or is it kind of flexibility? Do you know? Or?
So the main training and exercise that a person with spinal cord injury should focus on is those two: aerobic exercise within the moderate to vigorous intensity, as well as muscular resistance training, as mentioned before. And the thing is, for people with spinal cord injury who are wheelchair users, they are mostly constrained to upper limb or upper body exercises. And this might cause some sort of injury or pain to the shoulder joints. Yeah. And it's not really recommended to overuse the upper limbs. But you also need to train the lower limbs as well. There's been a technology called functional electrical stimulation of the lower limbs. But it's the thing with lower limb exercises is it's not for all, as opposed to upper limb only, because you need to have some form of functional neuron still connected to the lower limbs for in order for individuals who are also experiencing paraplegia. And it's not for all because of the side effects like autonomic dysreflexia.
Right.
Because when you insert electrical stimulation, it might cause skin burns and it might cause injuries that's related to unstable hemodynamics of the person with spinal cord injury.
So overuse could be one possible downside, yeah, if you don't really manage it,
yeah,
well.
Yeah. So if you were to do this at home, I mean, is it really as easy as sort of, you know,
yeah,
recommending that people buy these sort of PlayStation?
Need to be monitored,
yeah,
for an example?
Do you think it's a good idea if there's a special kind of specially modified game? Or can they just play any of the games that are currently out there?
So for the two groups that I'm concerned with, one is paraplegia, where only the lower limbs are involved. And the other group is tetraplegia, where the upper limb is involved as well as the lower limb. So for paraplegia, I do not see any problems for them to use it on their own at home, even at home, for the PlayStation 3 as a gaming. But I'm concerned about those with upper limb involvement, such as tetraplegia, because it's very difficult for them to maintain their trunk body balance.
Right.
So when they exert too much force, they might fall down the wheelchair.
Yep. Mm.
And if they're alone, so it becomes a bit difficult for them to readjust themselves. Or there might be injury not related to exergaming, but related to falls, and preventive measures should be done before.
So
they should be trained first.
So what would you recommend then if somebody was listening to this and they thought, you know, I want to give that a try, but they don't quite
not
know
sure
how to get started? Mm. Is there anywhere that you can refer them to?
Yes, as I said, you can refer to the UMMC Rehabilitation Clinic. Mm-hmm. But for those out there, for those, even those with tetraplegia and paraplegia, if they want to start exergaming, they can do so. But they can try move tennis first and move boxing. Those are the safest games, exagames that can be used in within my pilot study in my PhD research.
What about addiction? Is that of concern?
That's been raised so many times before. Yes. So the thing is, with addiction...
Addiction to exercise, isn't that a good thing?
But really depends. That's us, the able-bodied, playing, you know, virtual reality games. Yes. That's the concern.
Actually, the World Health Organization has already put games as one of the addiction side effects. But unfortunately, exagames is not considered under sedentary video games, which is related to addiction.
Okay.
So exagame is more active. There's not been any research that has substantially provided evidence that exagames can provide addiction.
However, we want to make that this clear, that for the able-bodied, we would rather you go out and exercise.
Yes.
She reluctantly said, yes.
Yes, but...
Because you're a gaming...
It's not a substitute for able-bodied in a way, or...
It can be a substitute.
When it rains.
Because
when it rains, yeah.
Because
when it's too hot.
Yeah.
What I found is that video exagaming requires lesser space. So if you want to play with your friends and there's no space, you can play it online with them. But that's the thing.
Okay.
With exagaming.
Coming from the gaming enthusiast, you know. I mean, I just love it. It's but yeah, I mean, what do you think, Dr. Alina?
No, I mean, I feel like I want to play it. you know, after this, I was just thinking, you know, well, I don't have a PlayStation at home, but if I did, I would definitely go home and play. I mean, I think it's a great thing, you know. Like I said, anything that sort of encourages people to stay active and to give them motivation to something that they can do, you know, that would be easy. And I think, you know, I think with the exagaming, it's still trying to promote staying active, and that can help in the rehabilitation process, right? But it's also, you know, the other things that Mazia mentioned earlier about, you know, the psychological effect as well. You know, it kind of, you know, it must be devastating to have this sort of injury happen in the prime of your life. And if there's something that, you know, you find that you can do fairly easily in the comfort of your own home, that you then find that it enables you to regain some function, right? I mean, as you mentioned, you know, it may not be a complete cure, but, you know, if you now find that you can move yourself from the bed onto your wheelchair, that is an amazing progress for some people, you know, and that, you know, I think psychologically really would really help. And not only that, if this sort of online, like you can also play with other people, you know, and that if you are stuck in your home and, you know, jobless and not able to find a job because of your disability, you know, this could be one way to try to connect with other people, and from there it may move on, you know, may lead on to other things. So as with anything, of course, you know, if you do it too much, of course it can cause addiction, you know, and you have to bear that in mind. But, you know, as I was saying, that, you know, it sounds as if you are given a little bit of training in the beginning how to use it, and then after that you can do it in the comfort of your own home, I think that's fantastic.
I mean, if you use the words rehab and exagaming, I think exagaming sounds a lot more sexy, don't you think? People would be a lot more interested to find out about
exagamer,
yeah. As they would the word rehab. You know, but are we becoming too dependent on robotics, Mazia? As far as rehab is concerned?
As far as rehab is concerned, I do not think so. Because the artificial intelligence that is required to fully function a entire rehab program is very much complex and difficult to maintain within the long run. We still need human workforce to maintain a rehabilitation program. And the other thing that robotics do not have is emotional intelligence, which by far only humans have now.
Yes, like you.
Yes.
What's on your plate next for research?
Okay, so I've been mentioning that I've hosted a sports exagaming competition.
Yep.
I've already held it in Perak, which is the state level. Next on the plate will be in Kuala Lumpur, and followed by in Terengganu, to cover the West Coast and the East Coast of West Malaysia. And after that, I will be hosting a national-level exergaming sports competition. And I've received a lot of good feedbacks from people with spinal cord injury who participated in the Perak state-level competition. Mm-hmm. And they seem pretty positive about it. And I think I would like to promote my exergaming program to even other population, targeted populations such as school-going children with disabilities, elderly population, marginalized females who are expected to stay at home because of cultural norms. So I think there's a long way to go with exergaming, and it's been very promising.
And what do you need right now? If you had one wish.
Funding.
Absolutely. You said it right. I was going to say, just ask for money.
Yes. How would they get more information about if they wanted to participate?
They can contact me directly for the sports exhibiting competition. You can Google my name, Marzia Ahmad Rosli. I'll be under University of Malaya. I have my contact details there. And feel free to contact me or drop me an email. And I'd be happy to respond to you.
Okay, I hope Syed Sadiq is listening to you. She needs money, Syed Sadiq, to do really good stuff for people who are physically challenged. Yeah. Fantastic work. Your message, Dr. Azlina?
My message is, well, it's kind of coming back to my three-point mantra, right? Exercise, diet, and hugs, if you remember.
Yes.
So today we're talking about exercise. And, I think actually, since doing these shows with you, I've become more active myself. I think it's more and more I can recognize, that... keeping active and exercising is, good at all levels, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Marzia, would you have a message?
To everyone who's interested in my work, please drop me an email. We can talk over coffee or tea, because I'm not a coffee enthusiast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us today, both of you. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, and Dr. Marzia Ahmad Rosli, a trainee lecturer and medical officer at the Department of Physiology, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, speaking to us about exergaming, especially for those who have spinal cord injuries. We also spoke about those who are sort of physically challenged as a result of various injuries and now extending it to the young, the old, and everyone else who possibly could benefit from it. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.